I was in a coma for 6 weeks while the doctors told my wife I was going to die. When I woke up, she told me the most fantastic story. My team kept running the business without me. Freelancers reached out to my team and said, "We will do whatever it takes as long as Craig's in the hospital." I consider that the greatest accomplishment in my career. My name is Craig Andrews, and this is the Leaders and Legacies podcast, where we talk to leaders creating an impact beyond themselves. At the end of today's interview, I'll tell you how you can be the next leader featured on this show. Today, I want to welcome Chris Brown. Chris is the CTO of WOW Remote Teams. At WOW, Chris works with his wife, Julie. That's Julie with an I. I don't see that often. Julie is the CEO and founder of Remote Teams. Together, they build custom recruitment platforms that help U.S.-based companies hire top talent across Latin America. Chris, welcome.
Hey, Craig. Thanks for having me on. It's great to be here with you today.
It's good to be with you. It's interesting. We were chatting in the green room. As soon as I heard Latin America, my brain just kind of locked in. I was like, oh, he does offshore software nearshore software development, because that's the only context I've ever heard of, Central America, nearshoring. But it kind of surprised me. You said that that's a shrinking part of the business as a part of the total pie.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. There's a wealth of talent available, and now it's 2026. There's Starlink is everywhere. Internet is solid everywhere. Like, there's so many things that you can do remotely, and as you start to just broaden that horizon of like, where else can I find talent to do the same kind of thing? You find out that there's a huge talent pool that's well educated, and there's giant companies down there. So all these people have worked in all kinds of areas, and you just go, okay, well, how many other things can I do? And the list is huge, of course. It's just a matter of finding the right people and knowing how to look and knowing where they're at. So yeah, software is a shrinking percentage of the pie, I think, just because there's so many options available for the pie.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, right now, talent is still, I think right now we're at close to one unemployed worker for every job. That doesn't mean that the skills match up. But, the projections I see by economists are that, we're going to get back into a talent scarcity race. And so I think any company that's growing has to have a talent strategy. It can't just be, hey, here's what we're making and we're going to sell a ton of it and we're going to be awesome. Inevitably, you're going to run into one of the roadblocks you're going to run into is you're going to run out of talent.
Yeah. And I mean, talent is there's a whole world of pieces there, because it's, how do you find the talent? How do you get them interested in your position? How do you interview? How do you onboard? How do you offboard? All of these pieces are really integral to how do you do a good job of keeping a business running. Talent is part of your capital deployment strategy at the end of the day. And to be a good steward of capital is to be good at capitalism, essentially.
Yeah. Well, how did you discover that all this talent's down Latin America?
Well, you said my wife, Julie, is the CEO. She's the original founder. She's from Bogota, Colombia. So I lived in Bogota for a few years, and then we moved up here to the US, and I had another business. And yeah, that other business, I needed talent. Like, every business needs people. It doesn't matter how much you want it to be like a one person awesome operation. It never is.
Let me, you know what? Did you say her name's Luisa?
No, Huli. J-U-L-I.
Huli. Oh, yeah. Okay. Julie. Huli.
Sorry. Yeah. We call it, it's Huli, just because it's in Colombia, that J is a soft J. So yeah. Like in Mexico, it'd be a hard J. Here for us, we call it Julie, so it's a hard J. But for some reason, Colombian Spanish, it's a soft J, so it becomes Huli.
No, I get, okay. No, it all makes sense. It was just, I was panicking a little bit. I was afraid that I had misintroduced your wife.
No, no, no. Yeah, no, not at all. Not at all. It's just a little bit different pronunciation.
So you were living in Bogota.
Yeah, lived there for 5 years.
Wow, what years?
2014 to 19.
Okay. What was it? One of the thoughts goes into my head in that part of the world is, okay, was that a period where it was stable or was that a period where it was unstable? Because there's
Stable, yeah.
it was
It's
stable.
pretty it's it was pretty it is pretty stable, especially the major cities down there. It's pretty safe now. The 90s were, I didn't go in the 90s, but my wife has stories about it was a wild world, for a while there, for the 90s, right? Because we're 40 now, so 90s is our memory time. But previous to that, her family has stories about the 80s and late 70s and stuff, and where the show Narcos and all of that happens, like the real crazy, like very unstable. But nowadays it's pretty stable. I mean, it's they're major cities. They're not as secure as the suburbs of the US. I'm over in the suburbs of Phoenix here, and one of the like number two or three rated safest cities in the US. Like, it's a totally different lifestyle here, of course, but in the grand scheme of things, it's not the 90s in Colombia anymore. It's you go out walking and you don't have a problem though.
Well, I'm having a flashback to, I think it was 2002 or 2003. I used to work with somebody named Diana Segura, and the World Cup was on. And I was like, "Hey, Diana, I was watching the World Cup. I'm having trouble finding the Colombia game. When does Colombia play?" And she just looks at me and she's like, "I hate you." 'Cause they hadn't made it in the World Cup. She's like, "I hate you." And I told her, I said, "Well, maybe if you quit shooting your soccer stars."
Right?
And she was
Yeah.
like, "Oh, that was an accident." I'm like, "He what? Tripped and fell into a bullet?"
Was not an accident. It was not an accident. Yeah, but they stopped doing that, and now look, now they're in the World Cup. Your advice worked.
It helps when you quit shooting your soccer stars. You have more talent for next year's bench.
Yeah, ex essentially. You keep them alive. It seems to help.
So you were there. What were the years again? 2014 to
2014 to 19.
2019. And then you moved to Tempe, to Phoenix?
Yeah, Phoenix. Yeah, just outside Phoenix. We're in the Southeast Valley, so my address is in Queen Creek. It's just outside Gilbert. These are just little towns in southeast of Phoenix. Yeah.
And then what did you start working on then?
So then I had a business. So we had a couple different lines of business, but we primarily had a soft medical and dental supplies company called MediDent Supplies. And we did, lots of dental supplies, dental surgical kits, medical supplies, medical, just everything and everything. It was mostly in e-commerce, but there was a physical sales aspect because you're talking about selling dental and medical supplies. So, somebody's got to go to their office and show it to them and bring them cookies and all that kind of thing. But yeah, so I was running the tech side of that business. We also had a CBD e-commerce, which was a giant pain in the butt because selling CBD products is not easy. The banking side of it is always a nightmare. And then we had like a software development agency prior to that, and that we also ran. So I was the CTO of all of that kind of stuff, building out those systems, building out those pieces. And yeah, so I came back to Phoenix where my family lives, and we opened a warehouse because we had quite a bit of flow in that e-commerce, and 3PLs are expensive, and it's easier to, if you have the ability and the manpower local, it's easy to run it yourself, especially at the scale that we were at that point in time.
So it's kind of, that was kind of like an awesome time to start up a medical supply business. What, 1 year before COVID hit?
Well, it had actually already been started. It had been running. So I'd been running because I do the tech side. So I was running the tech side from Colombia for a while there, for a couple of years. I think it started in 2016, I want to say. We actually started that. So it takes time to grow. But yeah, it went absolutely bonkers. I mean, COVID hit, we had supply lines from China and Korea for all kinds of different stuff. So we ended up just importing. And we hadn't previously been doing those kind of supplies, right? We've been mostly doing like surgical kits, like high-end specialty items, like, it was a niche kind of thing. And then COVID hits, and the whole world needs, swab kits. They need test kits. They need needles and syringes. They need, masks. Masks became a huge thing. It was very odd, but it worked. Hand sanitizer. There were crazy. There were companies that were doing like petroleum products, like racing fuels and stuff, started making sanitizers, and they were the worst smelling thing ever. Like, imagine racing fuel, but you're rubbing it on your hand. It was awful. It was awful. But people needed it, and there was a massive shortage, and that's what was available. So yeah, so we ended up importing tons of things. Our warehouse space grew significantly. We took over multiple warehouses in the same block, so just expanding sideways, and ended up with just 10, 8 figures, millions of dollars worth of medical supplies.
Yeah, talk about being in the right place at the right time.
I mean, it's a blessing until it's a curse, like the pandemic did come to an end, and when it did come to an end, we were stuck holding the bag, and that bag was large, and
Oh,
it's a
wow.
problem.
So what, you had like a ton of inventory you couldn't sell?
I mean, medical equipment expires, especially stuff like that. That wasn't our primary business line initially. We were built for specialty, high dollar, smaller scale kind of surgical equipment was our primary business originally. But, we did importation from China and Korea for a bunch of that stuff, which gave us the network. But all of this stuff expires, right? So masks come in. Masks are, they cost nothing. They're just a little piece of nothing, the little blue mask and stuff, and then N95s are nicer and they're higher quality. But they come in, and they come in on a pallet. And there's the bajillion of things on a pallet. The blue masks are tens of thousands to a pallet. N95s are thousands to a pallet. And you're shipping over containers full of these things, and storing them in your warehouse, and then moving them out through contracts to municipalities or hospitals or agencies, and then also the e-commerce side. So e-commerce was huge, just D2C, B2C. So you have this massive flow, and you're trying to keep up with the inventory needs of that kind of flow. And it's a surge kind of situation, So you have this huge peak, you have massive flow, you have all the sales of all these different items, and then the surge comes down because the pandemic slows down and the pandemic stops. But the things that are already in transit are already in transit. The things that are already ordered are already ordered. And it's hard to understand that supply chain from our perspective at that moment in time, just because, it wasn't a long-term business model of doing this, and we weren't very well experienced in doing that kind of thing. So yeah, you end up with a warehouse full of stuff that is slowly expiring over the next couple months, years, of things that are just no longer in demand. And the price points on them were high because they were bought in the middle of the surge. A lot of revenue was made because the price points were high on both sides. We were able to, we had to charge higher prices in order to sell the things, because that's how it works. So a lot of money was made, but there was a lot of leftover and a lot of just additional inventory that just essentially expired.
So, like masks, those expire?
They do expire. Yeah, masks
Wow.
expire. Yeah, especially the higher quality stuff, N95s, things like that. Those expire. They're only good for like 18 months or something, because the inside of an N95 mask is electrostatically charged. So part of the mask is not just the filtration of the material itself, but the electrostatic charges on the inside of the mask is also part of what's keeping things from, expanding out from the mask itself. And that degrades over time. And then also just there's rules about how long these things are good for. Like the little blue mask that you have, like it doesn't, it's not milk in the fridge. It doesn't start stinking and go bad, but it's outside of its expiration date. It's outside of its approved lifespan of 18 months or whatever that is,
Yeah, it's probably not real good if you cough a bunch of germs in it, and then those germs just kind of hang out for you to rebreathe. So where was your warehouse? Was it in Phoenix or?
in Mesa, Arizona. So just outside of Phoenix, eastern Phoenix.
So at this point, had you kind of left the Columbia behind you, and was Columbia still part of the story?
I mean, only partly. So Huli, the founder of WOW, she had started WOW doing recruitment services. So she was a executive for an education executive in Colombia. She was, she's very skilled, very professional. And then we came over here, and she kind of had a network of people that she knew here between my family and her friends and people that she knew. And, a lot of people needed talent, essentially. Like we know a lot of entrepreneurs because I'm an entrepreneur and we all are. So it ended up this thing where she ended up in a position where people were asking her, hey, can you help me find some people for primarily software positions at that point in time? So it just became this, like, she was like, yeah, she started posting on her Facebook to her network and that kind of thing, and just kind of finding people and connecting. Hey, here you go. Here's some people I know that I think are good. And you know how those things kind of fall on in on themselves and become a business, right? It's like, okay, well, can you help me do X? Like, can you help me do the background checks? Can you help me set up the interviews? Can you help me XYZ, the entire process essentially? And then you just land on this thing where you're like, well, yeah, sure. Why not? I may as well set this up, go get an LLC, get a bank account, and start running, HR services, essentially, recruiting and staffing services. And that kind of, it just coalesced on itself at that point. So there was multiple positions, mostly software, mostly developers, mostly tech, doing, just all kinds of software developers, doing a lot of front end stuff, doing some network engineering kind of stuff. And at that point, my business was quite large. I was doing significant numbers, and we had a large need for talent because the sales need, the admin need, and the CSR need were all just basically intractable problems. Like, there's always more need. Like, you always need another sales guy because there's another hospital, there's another agency, there's 12 calls that aren't getting answered. You always need more CSR people because if you're doing a couple thousand orders a day on a website, 5% of those people are calling you asking about something. They might be mad, they might be happy, who knows? They're calling you. That's a lot of calls. And then the admin side, if you're doing that much flow on a B2B side, that much flow on a B2C side, the accounting piece of that is, especially when you grew suddenly, like the pandemic was, it was fire all of a sudden, right? So just that kind of growth is hard to deal with, and it's hard to maintain staffing for. All that's to say, so I came to her, and we had this discussion of like, well, A, she's doing all these software pieces, so I was the tech guy for this company, so I'm bringing in the web developers, I'm bringing in the back end people, I'm bringing in the tech, the IT kind of support guy from her, and going, okay, well, I can place these people. They're just as good or better as the US talent that I'm finding, and significantly cheaper. This is a great setup for me. Like, I'm saving money on my department. This is the best thing that can happen. And then I'm like, the CSR team is struggling. They're struggling because whatever reason, I don't know. I didn't run the CSR team, but they were struggling. Can we find people for that? And she goes, I don't know. Let me try. And we replaced the entire CSR team with people from Latin America over the next couple of months. And then we do the
Wow.
same thing with the admin side. And then you get to the point where the only people that are left in the business that are in the US are the people that have to go to the warehouse and physically ship the stuff out or receive the stuff or whatever next needs to be done in the warehouse. There was like four people in the warehouse at any given day. It wasn't even a huge need of operation because most of it's just packing work that can be done at any time, or unpacking work that has to be done whenever the truck comes in. So you end up with this entire shift in operations to, there's a huge US talent pool and you're dealing with all of the payroll and you're dealing with all of the taxes and you're dealing with all the regulation, and it's just a spaghetti mess of it's a pain. And then you move to a Latin American contracted services, you're paying by the hour, you don't have any of the massive nightmare overhead, and somebody else is handling the recruiting, somebody else is handling the primary first line of interviews. You got to interview, you got to see if they fit with you and can do what you need. And it was a night and day difference for me. It just changed the operation of the entire company at that point. And we moved everybody. And yeah, it's like just fantastic.
That's cool.
Yeah.
How's the language barrier?
It depends. I would say not bad. I mean, I was hiring CSR and salespeople. Like, those people need to speak English fluently, quickly, without too much accent. We're in the US. I mean, you're in Texas. I'm in Phoenix. Hispanic accents, Latin accents are not a problem for us. It's part of
Yeah.
life. But so it's more of a sourcing kind of thing. If you need somebody to do data entry and they need to be able to talk to you in English, but they don't need to talk to a customer, as long as you and them can get together, it doesn't really matter, you know. But if they need to talk to a customer, if they're taking sales calls, and then it's, you know, we have people that are doing like Medicaid services. So, you know, you can imagine talking to elderly US people, you need a fairly solid level of English and a very good accent. So it's really just across the board. It's about finding the people that you need at the level that you need them.
Now there's a big movement where, you know, with AI coming out, there's a lot of companies that are like, oh, this is great. Customer support is now AI. We're going to send people over to these. The way you're laughing, I get the feeling you don't think that's a great idea.
I mean, personal experience. I don't even have to think it's a good idea. It's just personal experience. I hate it, right? Like, if it works, if we can get it to work, it'll be amazing, or maybe. But currently, I don't know about you, but anytime I go on to a thing and I'm like, I have a question, and it goes, let our AI assistant, the only thing I'm typing in is talk to a human, because the AI assistant, like, all it's doing is reading the FAQ back to you. I can do that myself on your website. It's like when you get on a sales call and they bring up a presentation. Like, I'm not here for a presentation. I can read your website. I'm here to find out if you have a solution to my problem and if you're actually have a real good solution or not. And I need to talk to somebody about that. And the AI is, it's not there yet. I mean, you know, if you just need something to chat to because you don't want to read the FAQ, then that's great. But that's not why I'm contacting support, you know? And maybe that's me. Maybe I'm different. I don't think so, but maybe.
Well, my personal belief, I don't believe AI is good at human connection. And when you're dealing with customer support, it's at a point of usually either a mild or significant frustration. You know, people aren't calling customer support to say, "Hey, I just want to tell you I'm having a wonderful day and I love your product. Glad you're here. That's all I had. Have a good day." That's not why they call customer support.
Mostly. You'd be surprised. People do call customer support to give praise, but it's 2% of the phone call volume.
Right. So here's somebody that's coming, and they have at least a mild level of frustration. And my personal belief is they now maybe if you could have it like an AI that, you know, quickly services but has a quick exit ramp to say, hey, you know, I'm happy to see if I can answer this for you, but at any time we can get a human on here. But generally, I think AI is not good at human connection. And when people are calling customer support or sales, that's where you really need good human connection. I actually have a salacious proof point that AI is not good at human connection. If it was, OnlyFans would not be a viable business model. I mean, and
There's a
think about the required vocabulary. They're not reciting Shakespeare.
yeah, right? It needs to be. What's funny is there's a bunch of AI models for those platforms now. So there's a whole sub-world of people that are using AI models for all of that. So they're creating, you know, you can the image models, the video models, you can get the unrestricted ones that create that kind of content. But the chatting is not done by the AI. The chatting is still done by a person. So there's people that contact us about finding chatters. People do chat for these platforms. So there's people that are managing OnlyFans, managing, I don't know what the other ones are, but they're managing these platforms and they'll contract. We don't actually have any on contract for whatever reason. We've never actually contracted those kind of positions, but there are people who contact us looking for chatters, which are people that just do the chat side of that. And it's an engaged sales position for X-rated content. Yeah. But I mean, I don't know if they're using it. Again, I'm not in that world in any shape or form. So I have no idea if they're like cracking that egg of getting AI to do the chatting. I would imagine they're trying, and I imagine they're trying hard because it's going to be way cheaper. But yeah, you're totally right. Like when I chat in to a service that I'm looking for support on, you know, having owned multiple companies that have decent support needs, I know that the FAQ reading back to you part is, you know, it's an 80-20 kind of situation, right? It's a Pareto principle thing where it's like, if I give you the FAQ, 80% of people's problems is probably solved at that point because most of what my CSR team is doing is picking up a phone call and then looking through the FAQ to find the answer, because they're, 80% of problems are the same. When is my order going to arrive? Well, it shipped 2 days ago. It'll be there tomorrow. They're normally a simplistic kind of thing, which is where that front end of that really. But you end up with the thing I'm talking about, and I'm not trying to say I'm special in any way, but I'm capable of reading an FAQ. And if I haven't found the answer myself, it's probably because it either is a more in-depth problem or I just missed it. So maybe the AI bot has the answer for me. They're always going to try. But the other 20% of that time, I'm trying to get to a human. And the harder that gets, the more frustrated I am by the time I talk to that person.
Well, I'll give you an example where I called into, who knows where they're based now, but they used to be based in Scottsdale. GoDaddy used to have like the world's best customer service. You call there, you get a human. They had a clear English accent, American accent. They were helpful. They seemed happy to be there. They seemed happy that you called. And there were times I would call GoDaddy and they're like, well, this is not technically in our service, but we want to help you and we'll solve this for you. And they did. And now when I call GoDaddy, it's like a whole different experience. As a matter of fact, for the first time ever, I bought a domain on a platform other than GoDaddy. And I actually transferred a couple domains from GoDaddy over to this other platform. And it's just the website sucks. And when I call customer service, it takes forever to get a person. And there was one time I'm waiting, going through the music and all that, waiting for a person. And I just keep searching and eventually figure out how to solve it for myself while I'm sitting there on hold waiting for customer service. And there's a part of me that wonders if that's really where they're aiming. They're like, yeah, they saw my interaction. They're like, oh, score.
It
Yeah.
worked.
It worked.
It worked. Put him on hold for an hour. He'll figure it out himself, or just go away, one or the other.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you have this like, yeah, it's the same issue with a bunch of all these big companies. You get to the point where I think it's part of the problem is that just the flow of customer support need is so big that it's just, it becomes again an intractable problem. Imagine being Meta or Facebook or whatever. Like the amount of people that have the just most brainless requests to their customer support must be just an inundation that you can't deal with, But when you have a legitimate request, when you're a business running large advertising budgets or you need something, I need their WhatsApp platform to do, I need the business WhatsApp. I needed Meta Verified in order to use WhatsApp because Latin America uses a lot of WhatsApp. It was impossible to It was absolutely impossible to contact anybody. And I'm like, I want to pay you for service. I literally want to give you money. And they're just like, yeah, we don't care. We don't care.
Well, I was going to
Like,
say,
what?
Meta's actually solved the customer service problem. They just don't publish the
They don't do
numbers.
it. Yeah. They don't have customer service. They solved for no. That's it. It's like Amazon. Amazon, their part of their ethos was customer service. And I say was because as an Amazon customer, as a Prime customer, it no longer seems to be. Like, yes, returns are easy, but I bought a coffee machine, an espresso machine a couple months ago. And it's not a cheap machine. It's not like super expensive or anything, but it's not cheap. And then Christmas time rolled around, and this was like 2 weeks after I bought it, and it went on sale, like 20% off. So I chatted in and I was like, hey, this I literally like I just pulled it out of the box. Can I just get the difference back? And they go, no, sorry, we have a $50 maximum on returning the difference. I was like, okay, so what are my options? He's like, well, you can buy the new one at the lower price and return the old one. I'm like, how is that a better business? Like, this is a large machine. This is going to cost you $70 to ship back and forth. And instead of just making up the, $100 difference or whatever it was, you're going to make me order a new one and ship the old one. Like, this is wild. And it's that same thing. Customer service just became this, it becomes a rote SOP. And I understand why. I'm not like, I can't believe that's the thing. I don't have a solution for it today, obviously. It's not my problem to solve. But it's just a frustration point constantly of you're using AI on the front end to filter out that 80%. I understand that. Like, of course you are. But just letting the other 20% basically fall off is not the answer. And I don't have the answer. I don't know what the answer is.
Yeah, and I think the answer. Do you remember the days when if you bought a piece of software, if you bought like Microsoft Word, It came with a manual that was 2 inches thick. And at some point, they figured out, hey, we need to make this so easy to use that people don't need that thick manual, and we need to provide documentation it. And I think you need both. I think you need to maintain the customer service, but you need to go through your system and look at where are people getting tripped up, and how can we build something in so somebody doesn't get confused by this. I mean, you'll get an email from me probably in the next week, as an example, saying, hey, we produced your podcast. It's going to be going live on this date. Here are the assets to help promote it. Well, for a while, when those emails were going out, I had people that were emailing me back. I'm like, I can't find the podcast. I'm like, no, it's not live yet. Oh, it's not. And so eventually I changed and put in bold, all caps, red letters, your episode is not live yet, but it will be soon. And went back to, normal black, lower, case, it will be soon. But I had to do that because I had so many people complaining that they got my email, but they can't find the episode. And so that's just human interaction. You have to say, okay, when people are getting tripped up on this, instead of me blaming them for not reading, how do I make sure that they, one, feel delighted, and two, receive the message I'm intending to send?
Yeah, it says, "Hey, I know what my immediate response to your email is going to be now, and you're going to love it." it's just communication is always an issue, I think. It doesn't matter. It's not communication with clients, communication with other people, communication with your team, like communication with your wife, like your spouse, whatever. It's always an issue because, but from my perspective, we always assume our knowledge in the other person. Right. And we always assume our importance in the other person. And me, everybody, we're emailing somebody who this is not the top of mind thing for them today. There's 12 other things. They're something is on fire over here and it's just going sideways. And they get your email and like, okay, I need to put this into queue. Wait, I can't find the episode. What happened? And you're just like, what do you mean what happened? You didn't read the email, but like it's just so easy to get lost on that point that you're constantly looking for. How do you clarify communication? And it's again, no, just talk about hard problems for some reason. Like they don't sound like hard problems. Oh, communication. Just talk to people and tell them. No, people don't understand you correctly. You don't effectively give your position to people. And this is me, not you, like you as in everybody, including myself. Because for me, like it's so easy to assume knowledge. Like, yeah, of course it works that way. That's how it works. Why don't you know that it works that way? How would they know that it works that way? They haven't done it a dozen times like I have in the past 2 weeks, So yeah, you end up having to write big, bold, red letters at the top of emails going this, and then, you're like, yeah. And then people call other people stupid all the time. Oh, they're stupid. They didn't read the email. No, it just wasn't, it wasn't top of mind at that moment. They got the email from you and thought, oh, their episode's out, and it's not.
Well, and when I did that, it solved the problem. I don't get those emails anymore.
Well, you're
And
going
yeah, I get one.
to
But and it's a better experience for them because I don't have to go back and say, if you'd read
one.
the email, which I've obviously I wouldn't say it that way, but how I say it,
And you get to that frustration point of like, you want to reply that way after the third or fourth one. You're like, if you had read the email, and instead of, and doing exactly what you did is the right move, of course. Like, you got to fix the communication issue.
Well, and I don't want them to feel embarrassed once they put two and two together and realize, oh, that was my problem. Not he said he used the right words. I just didn't read. Well, that's a moment of embarrassment that I don't want them to experience.
Yeah. And you're never sure how people are going to respond to that embarrassment, right? Some people take it as like, oh, I'm sorry. Oops, my bad. And some people get defensive instead. It's better. Why are we going to run into that problem? Why are we going to be offensive in a moment that we don't need to be? Just clarify and move on.
Well, Chris, this has been really interesting discussion. I never realized there was so much talent in Latin America that's available and skilled, especially with good English ac or American accents.
Yeah,
And
no, there's a huge talent pool.
well, how can people reach you?
Mostly our website, wowremoteteams.com, is always a good place to go. You can find me on LinkedIn. Chris Brown's a little bit hard to find, but if you do Wow or Wow Remote Teams on LinkedIn, you'll find me and the rest of the people associated with me. So that's an easy way. I would say those are the best ways, really.
Well, excellent. Well, hey, thanks for coming on Leaders and Legacies.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was fantastic chatting with you today.
This is Craig Andrews. I want to thank you for listening to the Leaders and Legacies podcast. We're looking for leaders to share how they're making impact beyond themselves. If that's you, please go to alliesforme.com/guest and sign up there. If you got something out of this interview, we would love you to share this episode on social media. Just do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post it on the socials. If you know someone who would be a great guest, tag them on social media and let them know about the show, including the hashtag Leaders and Legacies. I love seeing your posts and suggestions. We are regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you don't miss anything, please go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show. And it means a lot to me. It means a lot to my team. If you want to know more, please go to alliesforme.com or follow me on LinkedIn. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.